Hello and welcome back to the Ever-Changing World podcast. I'm your host, Ava Zanetti, and today's episode is going to be about that thing in the sky. The thing that's kind of a thing sometimes, kind of not. Sometimes they're in the day and sometimes they're in the night. Of course, what I'm talking about is that big gray kind of sphere that we've grown to know and love, called the moon. And talking about, of course, how we would be going to the moon. Today's episode, I assumed we would have had a nice, big, exciting launch that I could have talked about, but it got postponed, and I thought, you know what, why not just make the episode and then do updates on the launch whenever it's going to come out, because we have no idea when it's even going to happen now, and I'll get into that later. But I thought, why not just talk about Artemis, as well as talk about, of course, other past moon missions. I've done tons and tons and tons of space research, and, you know, I'm a huge space fanatic, so I know tons, of course, everyone knows tons about the moon missions, and of course, that was Apollo. So to kind of start off this episode, before I talk about Artemis and our missions back to the moon, which is what Artemis is all about, I want to briefly talk about our beginnings to the moon. So, space exploration really didn't happen until the 1950s, late 1950s, when the first satellites and rockets were starting to be launched. And originally, NASA was created not for space exploration, rather, it was in the hopes of creating better military technology, better military equipment, of course, to fight in the wars. This was a time after World War II when a lot of other wars were going on, especially that the U.S. needed to fight. And the USSR, by creating these satellites that could go into space, it was a huge worry that the USSR would be hurting the U.S. and could attack the U.S., and would be the dominant force and power. And of course, since the USSR or the Soviets were the communists, they didn't want that ideal to be leached back onto us. So it was really vital that we would use space to our advantage. And eventually, what that just turned into was a US versus the USSR space race. And the US had taken Germans from the Nazi times, who were building these big, huge rockets, the V2 rockets, and they were the best of the best, and they took them and said, hey, you're gonna make missiles. At the time is what they thought they'd be, then she became rockets for us. And then the USSR also took the remaining Germans that were left from that, since the Germans were really ahead in space technology, and they took some of them, learned a little bit from them, and kind of discarded them to the side when they decided, okay, you know, this, we don't need them anymore. And then they were starting to build their side to it. So originally, the Russians, or as I want to call them, the Soviets, since it was the USSR at the time, the Soviets were really ahead in space technology. They sent out the first satellites, they sent out the first man in space, the first woman in space. They sent out a lot of firsts. Well, the States were a little bit behind, but eventually, the first project that the US worked on, NASA worked on, was the Mercury missions. And what these were was our very first attempt at getting man in space. So originally, we started with animals, sending out chimps, like our great one called Astronaut Ham. He was one of the best chimps that we sent out. So we sent out him, and we sent out a bunch of chimps. We saw what the effects were. Because one of the big worries is, because we'd never really been into space, we barely knew anything about space as it began with, we had no idea what the effects would be on humans, and even if it'd be a good idea to spend a man out into space. What the Russians did, actually, and they didn't really, they were really kind of quick with it, they sent out a dog, Latka, I believe is how you pronounce it. And, actually, a lot of people nowadays get very sad about this dog dying in space. But, you know, they kind of just threw the dog, they knew the dog would die in space, and they threw the dog into a rocket, and, just let it kind of see what happened, and all honesty, it helped them get ahead of the US for a really long time, so that worked out really well for them. But going back to the U.S., they sent a bunch of chimps, and then eventually they had their first Mercury mission. The first American in space was Al Shepard. So Al went into space only for a few minutes, similar to how Blue Origin now, Jeff Bezos' rockets, if you've seen, Jeff Bezos was only in space for a few minutes and barely touched space, is what they're calling it. He touched space, as he kind of just went enough into where space kinda is. And they kind of counted it as, okay, fine, Jeff went into space. So that's kind of what Al did, but of course it was a big deal, and he was the first into space. And the second didn't do anything else much exciting. The fact that I'm forgetting his name right now probably means that he didn't do much exciting things. And then the third Mercury mission was John Glenn. So before John Glenn, we had, well, the first man in space was Yuri Gagarin. He was from the Soviets, of course. He was the first man in space, and he did orbits in space already, so he was already ahead of the game. But John Glenn was the first American to orbit the Earth. And that was really, really exciting because it really showed that the U.S. was finally catching up to the Soviets. And they were finally getting close. And they finally had some sort of ground to stand on that really validated them as, okay, you know what? They could be ahead in this space race. This is very exciting. So during the Mercury and during the, oh, it's not catching me right now, but during the Russians' first attempt at spacecraft, it kind of ended there. They ended what they were doing, and actually I'm gonna make sure I get this, because it's gonna bother me if I don't get this, because I've been doing so much research on this lately. So the end of Mercury, as well as the end of, goodness gracious, the Vostok, yes, sorry. So the Russians, their missions were called the Vostok missions, and what was happening during these is they were ending these missions, they were moving on to their next ones. So the US, they had planned to go to the moon, as well as the USSR. They were also planning on the moon. So the US, what they were doing is they were building they were building the Saturn V rocket. So you've already seen the Lego sets, the big Saturn Vs. They were building those rockets, which would be the most powerful rockets in the world. And on the other hand, the USSR was building the N1 booster, which actually would be even more powerful than the Saturn V, which they didn't. The US and the Russians kind of kept a little bit locked secret that they were going to the moon at this point. So both were kind of keeping it a little bit hush-hush. So those were the two missions that were going to go on to the moon. It was Saturn V versus the N1 booster. And that was happening. So then the U.S. moves on, and they go to the Gemini missions. So these missions were now sending two pilots into space. And they did a few kind of fun, funky stuff with the Gemini missions that weren't crazy exciting. But it was getting them prepared for the Apollo missions. And then once the Gemini missions ended, it was time for Apollo. And what Apollo is doing now, actually, the USSR, for catching up with them, they're kind of falling behind. They're not doing as much, and as well, the money is running out, and the USSR was really great with propaganda. So they really like to show their country, like, yeah, we're number one, we're the best, we have the best technology. Well, a lot of the times that was kind of a lie. They lied about certain astronauts dying. They didn't tell their country or the rest of the world that they did have astronauts that died in space. And the U.S. was a lot more open, right? They showed their mistakes, and they also showed their, successes right into the limelight. Well, the USSR really wasn't. And they had a lot of propaganda going on. And a lot of that was trying to make them look better. But what ended up happening is they were slipping behind a lot. And that's the only reason why the U.S. was getting ahead, is because the money was running out for them. They had gained a new leader. Their big leader ended up passing away that was working on their N1 booster. And it was kind of the end for them before, really, they could even get close to the moon. So the U.S., of course, is now taking over. It's a space race, all about competition. And they're not ready to be done yet. So the first few Apollo missions were nothing super spectacular. A few unmanned missions to make sure everything was working well. Which is similar to Artemis, which I'll speak about, and there was a few missions that just orbited the moon. So there was a mission where they got to go around the dark side of the moon, where if you don't know anything about the moon, it doesn't spin while it's spinning around us. It kind of stays in this locked position. So we, as people, when we look up at the moon, we always see the same side of the moon pointing at us. The dark side of the moon is the side that you can't see. It's that dark side. You can't see it. And only if you go into space and you orbit around the dark side of the moon will you actually see it. And it's super cold, too, because it's, you know, not facing anything. So, it is a really interesting place, because when you're there, you can't get any communication with the outside world, with the Earth, so it's just quiet for a really long time, and that's complete isolation. The most isolated human, was doing that, and I'll speak about that in a second. So, the first few missions, they got to go to the dark side of the moon, and that was very exciting, because they survived that, right? NASA couldn't hear for them for a while, quite scary, but then they come out on the other side and everything was great. So, they flew back, and then the first, of course, moon landing was, of course, in 1969, in July, at the very end of July, July 20th, is when we landed on the moon. And, of course, Neil Armstrong was the first man, John Glenn was the second man on the moon, and then the man who was in complete isolation, like I was just speaking about, was Michael Collins. Michael Collins spent many, many, many minutes on the dark side of the moon in complete, that's the most isolated a human has ever been, with no contact whatsoever with anything. Just him in this tiny little tin can, hoping that nothing would go wrong so he could save his fellow passengers, which he did. So, yeah, that was the first man on the moon, and then we had a few more Apollo missions where we sent a few more men on the moon to do a few fun stuff, collect some moon rocks, all of that, and then we just stopped. We decided to do other stuff. We did the ISS stuff, where now we're just orbiting around Earth. We've done really cool stuff, of course, like the James Webb Space Telescope, which is out there doing amazing things right now, Hubble, but we haven't really sent a lot of people out into space doing crazy cool stuff. We kind of just stopped. After Apollo, it was kind of just done. We did some space shuttle missions, but those only really helped the ISS. So we just stopped. We stopped caring. And now this is a rejuvenation. This is era 2 of Apollo, and this is called Artemis. And this is exciting. A lot of people, including myself, are kind of annoyed about this mission in a way. Of course, I'm very excited that more people get to go to the moon and experience that, and we get to learn more about the moon, and we start building moon habitats. That's really cool stuff. But I really do think the future is Mars, and I think we should be focusing our attention on that. And we don't have a lot of time to be focusing our attention on mediocre stuff. So I think that a lot of what we're doing could be done differently. I think that Artemis, personally, is amazing, it's great, whatever. But I think we can do more, and I think that NASA should stop focusing their attention so much on the moon missions. Maybe it's just a little bit of a warm-up so they can get used to back sending people in space, and I think that also is needed in a way, because we haven't sent a man on the moon in a while, so we should probably do that again before we send someone to Mars on a really long journey over there. Anyways, so the name Artemis, we're going to that. The name Artemis comes from the Greek goddess of the hunt and moon, which obviously is really on brand for what this mission is. So Greek goddess of hunt, forest and hills, moon, and archery. So Greek mythology is filled with respected gods and goddesses that continue to aspire. Artemis is known as a goddess of hunt. I'm so sorry. And is one of the most respected of all the ancient Greek deities. It is thought that her name, and even the goddess herself, may even be pre-Greek. She was the daughter of Zeus, king of the gods, and Titaness Leo. And she has a twin brother, the god, of course, Apollo. So this is Apollo's sister, and that is obviously why it's named after Artemis. Artemis and Apollo are brother and sister. Apollo was the first one, and, you know, twin brother, they're doing the same thing, the same mission, quite funny, as Artemis. So not only Artemis was the goddess of the hunt, she was also known as the goddess of wild animals, wilderness, childbirth, and virginity. She was also protector of young children, and was known to bring and relieve disease in women. So she has a few really interesting things. So she was the daughter of Zeus, and despite many stories of his greatness, Zeus, of course, Zeus's weakness was the infidelity to his wife Hera. Zeus impregnated a titan called Leto. Hera became angry upon learning of Zeus's unfaithfulness and relation. She forbade Leto from giving birth on land. Eventually, she found solace on the floating island of Delos. There, she gave birth to Artemis and Apollo, and that's why they are related to the moon and kind of space stuff. According to Homeric hymn to Artemis, the twins were born on Artiga. Either way, most accounts say that Artemis came first, which actually I find interesting, because, you know, Apollo was our first mission, so I think that's kind of funny. Not much is known about Artemis's childhood, etc. So, yeah, that's kind of a little bit about Artemis and her backstory there, which I think is interesting. I always like to know, I don't know about you guys, but I always, you know, like to know a little bit about people's backstories and, or, sorry, namesake backstories, because I found it very interesting. So, now we're going to get into what exactly the Artemis missions are. I spieled a long time about Apollo and all of that exciting stuff about NASA. I spieled about, you know, what the name even is. So why don't we just get into why we're even here? What even is this mission? Why do we care? So, with Artemis missions, NASA will land the first woman and first person of color on the moon, using innovative technologies to explore more of the universe's surface than ever before. So, of course, what they mean by that is we're actually sending other people other than white men to the moon, which is great. It's very exciting that other people get to experience that. We will collaborate with commercial and international partners and establish the first long-term presence on the moon. Then we will use what we can learn on and around the moon to take to the next giant leap, sending the first astronauts to Mars. Very exciting stuff. Why are we going to the moon? We're going back to the moon for scientific discovery, economic benefits, and inspiration for a new generation of explorers, the Artemis generation, which of course is us. Maintaining American leadership in exploration, we will get a global alliance and explore deep space for the benefit of all. So, the moon. Discovery. So, with Artemis, we are building on more than 50 years of exploration experience to reignite America's passion for discovery. Which, of course, we kind of stopped. They're basically like, yeah, we kind of stopped doing anything interesting. So I guess we got to do that again to make people want to invest in space. people like seeing people go to space. Maybe we should focus more on that than, you know, just trying to fix the ISS that's breaking down right now. Maybe that would work. Next is economic opportunity. Artemis missions enable a growing lunar economy by fueling industry, supporting job growth, and furthering the demand for skilled workforce. Basically saying, hey, let's live on Mars. let's hire more people at NASA. And of course, inspiration for a new generation. We'll explore more of what the moon than ever before with our commercial and international partners. Along this way, we'll engage and inspire new audiences. The Artemis generation. Basically saying, again, we're boring. We need to make people excited about space. Which is great. which I think is really funny. So, a little bit about these international partners that they mentioned. I'm kind of skipping around here. So, principles for a safe, peaceful, and prosperous future. Through Artemis, NASA aims to land the first woman, first planet on the moon, her like a new area, etc. While NASA's leading the Artemis missions, international partnerships will play a key role in achieving a sustainable and robust presence on the moon, while preparing to conduct a historic human mission to Mars. With numerous countries and private sector players conducting missions and operations in lunar space, it's critical to establish a common set of principles to govern the civil exploration and use of outer space. The Artemis Accords will describe a shared vision for principles grounded in the Outer Space Treaty of 1967 to create a safe and transparent environment which facilitates exploration, science, and commercial activities for all of humanity to enjoy. So if you don't know, we have a little thing called the Outer Space Treaty, which sounds really funny, but it's basically this treaty to say space is for everybody. Nobody owns a certain part of space. So NASA can't discriminate and be like, hey, we can only go to space. No, it's kind of like, hey, we all can, because it's, you know, So more than a dozen countries have signed the Artemis Accords, which is really cool. So peaceful purposes, international cooperation. Artemis is intended not to only bolster space exploration, but enhance peaceful relationships between nations. We love everybody. Therefore, at the core of Artemis Accords is a requirement that all activities will be conducted for peaceful purposes. Transparency is key principle for responsible civil space exploration, and NASA has always taken care to publicly describe its policies and plans. Artemis Accords partner nations will be required to uphold this principle by publicly describing their own policies and plans in a transparent manner. Interoperability is, gosh, I really butchered that, of systems is critical to ensure safe and robust space exploration. Therefore, the Artemis Accords call for partner nations to utilize open international standards. I apologize. Develop new standards when necessary and strive to support interoperability to the greatest extent practical. Emergency assistance to provide those in need according to a responsible civil space program. That means NASA and the partner nations, you know, whatever, will keep everyone safe. Registering space objects, creating a safe and sustainable environment once again to do experiments and all of that, and release the scientific data. They are committed to sharing data to everybody and protecting heritage. Protecting historic sites and artifacts would be just as important in space as it here on Earth. How exciting. Artemis Accords and NASA partnerships commit to protection. It's basically saying we're not going to ruin the moon landing spot. We're just going to keep it nice and safe. And that's really cool. And space resources. The ability to extract and utilize resources on Moon, Mars, and asteroids would be critical to support safe and sustainable space exploration and development. And deconfliction of activities, avoiding harmful interference is also very important. Orbital debris and space at disposal, create a safe and sustainable environment. So, the partner nations. Who is helping the U.S.? We have Australia, Bahrain, Brazil, Canada, Colombia, France, Israel, Italy, Japan, Luxembourg, Mexico, New Zealand, Poland, Republic of Korea, Romania, Saudi Arabia, Singapore, Ukraine, United Arab Emirates, UK, United Kingdom, and of course, the United States of America. And they are on the Artemis Accords. So that's really exciting. And I know Canada, I live in Canada, they're helping a lot with this mission, and that's really cool. And of course, our success will change the world is a little note they have here. So how are we going to the moon in the first place? So, they are going to build an Artemis base camp on the surface and the gateway in lunar orbit. These elements will allow our robots and astronauts to explore more and connect more science than ever before. So, Ariane spacecraft. The NASA spacecraft that will carry astronauts from Earth to lunar orbit and back. This is a spacecraft that will kind of do it all. The Space Launch System rocket, or the SLS rocket. The only rocket that can send Neuron astronauts and cargo to the moon on a single mission. Upon launch, the SLS will be the most powerful rocket in the world. We're doing crazy big things right now. Exploration ground systems. The structures on the ground necessary to support launch and recovery of returning astronauts. Gateway. The spaceship in lunar orbit where astronauts will transfer between Uran and the lander on regular Artemis missions. Gateway will remain in orbit for more than a decade, providing a place to live and work and supporting long-term science and human exploration on and around the moon. Human landing system. Built by American companies, human landing systems are full final mode of transportation that will take astronauts from lunar orbit to the surface and back to orbit. An Artemis base camp. For astronauts, a place to live and work on the moon. The Artemis base camp concept includes a moon, a modern lunar cabin, a rover, and a mobile home. So a little bit of a fun, expensive Airbnb. I think that's the ultimate Airbnb, to be honest, to go on the moon. I'm cracking jokes alone in my room. So, again, quote they have here. All that we build, all that we study, all that we do prepares us to go. So mission patches. They have a fun one here, Artemis 1. This is going to be the uncrewed flight test that has not launched yet of the Space Launch System. Nobody knows this. That's what it stands for, CSLS. And the Orion spacecraft around the moon, which I will talk about in a minute. Artemis 2 will be the first crewed flight of this around the moon, and then Artemis 3 and beyond will be people on and around the moon. Very exciting stuff. Looks like everything's happening only within a few years. It's we're going to the moon, baby. We're going to the moon. And it's really crazy, exciting, cool stuff. So, we have finally made it to what we were here to talk about. What I wanted to talk about was this launch, and I can't talk about this launch. That's why I'm not trying to talk about too much about Artemis, because it's making me mad. But Artemis 1. Artemis 1 that I really want to talk about, because it's what I was supposed to be talking about. It didn't launch. It just didn't launch, and it's making me really sad, but I guess better safe than never. So, what is Artemis 1? Here we go. This is a really bad... There's like no information here. Anyways, Artemis 1 basically, in a few words, is the first launch of the SLS, the most powerful rocket in the world, or will be once it actually launches. And it is gonna go around the moon. So basically, I have a little image here that I will put in the description so you can take a little peek at it as well. Basically, it's gonna launch, it's gonna do like kind of a half orbit, three quarters of an orbit around the Earth, shoot out, or at least it'll separate and Orion will shoot off. And it's gonna go, and it's gonna go in kind of this almost infinity eight, and it's gonna go around the moon, not fully around though. And then it's going to hit this kind of spot that's really far out in the moon's orbit. It's going to go into the moon's orbit. And then it's going to go out almost and kind of spin around and shoot out of the orbit. It's kind of interesting. It's an interesting image here that I'm really trying to read here. Yeah, sorry. It's going to go into the moon's orbit after it leaves the moon's... after it leaves right beside the moon, it's going to go into the moon's orbit, fall back into the moon, and then leave the moon's orbit. Kind of follow the moon's orbit, then leave it, and then go back to Earth. This is what the Apollo missions looked like as well. I remember seeing images of this. This is what the Apollo missions looked like. It's basically a big affinity eight around the moon and the Earth with a lot of complexities and a lot of things that you have to hit or you aren't going to make it to certain spots. But that's why you do unmanned missions first, and that's why the unmanned missions should go for a launch. Anyways, so these are, it's really basic procedure to do this Infinity 8, because, you don't want to go against with how the Earth works or how the Moon works when you are launching this, massive, few billion dollar rocket. It's dumb to do that. It's smarter to, obviously follow the natural path, and that's what seems to work. That is, the kind of launch system here. Of course, it's going to launch from Cape Canaveral, California, Space City, the best city. Love to visit. And it is a 3-week mission, so it takes about 3 weeks to do this whole little orbit here. So that is Artemis. Now... what the hell happened yesterday? Today's Tuesday. Yesterday was Monday. When it was supposed to launch, it would have been perfect for the episode. Oh my gosh. Alright, so NASA says the next attempt at a debut spaceflight for its Mega Moon rocket could happen as early as Friday. I feel like that's a lie, but engineers and other experts must review a raft of problems that saw other missions plan launch to be scrapped prior to liftoff. Honestly, these types of I gotta scrap when the launch is gonna happen happens all the time. I mean, it happened with the James Webb Space Telescope and it got delayed years. So, I mean, it's not really like a new thing that this is going to happen. But NASA kind of endured several issues at Kennedy Space Center. So first the big issue was the uncooperative weather, with thunderstorm delaying the propellant load for the rocket. So basically, you don't want to launch in bad weather. I mean, it's just not smart to launch in bad weather. It's likely something bad could happen if you launch in bad weather. So it's better to wait. So once the go-ahead was given to fill the fuel tanks, right, they didn't want to put the fuel in while it's bad weather, which altogether holds 2,778,492 liters of propellant, or the equivalent of 41 swimming pools of water. Another issue arose. The liquid oxygen and liquid hydrogen were filling at unacceptable rates relative to one another. The process was repeatedly stopped and started to do a hydrogen leak, where the teams were able to reduce the seepage. The tanks were being filled with super-cooled liquid oxygen and hydrogen propellants, and launch teams began a conditioning process to chill the engine sufficiently for liftoff, NASA said. But one of the four main engines, and I've seen so many memes from this, but one of the four main engines failed to cool down as expected. And while trying to resolve that issue, the team noticed another leak involving a vent valve higher on the rocket, prompting launch team managers to pause countdown and then call off the launch at 8:35 a.m. ET. Engineers struggled to pinpoint the source of the cooling problem well after the launch postponement was announced. At a press conference Monday afternoon, Artemis Missions Manager Mike Safran said the fault did not appear to be the engine itself, but with plumbing leading to it. So basically, engine number 3 sucks, and we don't like engine number 3. It was engine number 3 that failed, and there's been so many funny memes about, like, there's ones with astronauts and the two astronauts awake, one's asleep, and it's like, the astronauts asleep is number 3. So, you know, just kind of funny stuff. But, obviously, it wasn't going well, and that is not, you know, ideal. So, that is kind of the situation with our rocket, and it got delayed. So, the team kind of says that, you know, the problem required what turned out to be a simple fix. Even if there had been no technical snags, thunderstorms ultimately would have prevented a liftoff, NASA said. So, wouldn't have even happened anyways. Dark clouds and rain gathered over a launch site as soon as the countdown was halted. Thunder echoed across the coast, so it wasn't happening. Launch team to consider next steps. The launch team will reconvene on Tuesday afternoon, so today, to review data on the problems and develop opinions for the next launch attempt. There were a number of challenges. We were ready for some of them, and the technical challenges we encountered on the engine bled and the vent valve were just some things we're going to have to look at tomorrow after we get a little smarter and get rested. Asked by reporters whether a Friday launch was possible, he said that day was definitely in play, although it was possible the launch could be delayed until mid-September or later. Isn't a horrible delay. I mean, I've seen things delayed years. Again, like the James Webb Space Telescope was delayed for years, so it's not really an insane number. The problems seen Monday were reminiscent of NASA's space shuttle era, again, when hydrogen fuel leaks disrupted countdowns and delayed a string of launches back in 1990. We seem to have issues with liquid hydrogen. We should maybe work on that. This is a very complicated machine, a very complicated system, and all those things have to work. And you don't want to light the candle until it's ready to go, said NASA Administrator Bill Nelson. Yeah, you just don't want to, this is a $1 billion machine, you just don't want to do it. The start of the Artemis mission, Artemis 1, won't involve any crew on board except for 3 mannequins and a plush Snoopy, but is a crucial step in returning humans to space. Artemis 2 is to set and launch in 2024 or 2025, with 4 astronauts who orbit the moon, including a Canadian. Last time anybody was on the moon, listen to this, this is so ridiculous, was in 1972. That is right, it will literally be 50 years before someone sets foot on the moon again. It'll be 50 years. That is actually really sad in a lot of ways, because we had a lot. Anyways, so if we want to see what we can expect, or what we should have expected, in the first 10 minutes after this launch, a lot happens. The solid rocket boosters separate, the launch abort system jettisons in the core stage, the big orange tank separates and falls back to Earth. at 8:51 ET Oron's solar rays use a powered spacecraft deploy, which will take roughly 12 minutes. Then Oron needs to get into position to head on course to the moon. To do this, there are very few maneuvers, which comes through the day, which NASA will be watching very closely. If it goes well, Oron will be the outbound trip to the moon that will continue 5 days after launch. When it gets there, it has to move into a very particular orbit, which will take a farther 3 days. So this journey will be about, you know, it'll be a long time. Finally, 35 days after Oron left Earth, the spacecraft will begin a ship home, where it'll be scheduled to splash down the Pacific Ocean off the coast of San Diego on October 10th. Or, I don't even know if this is right anymore, but it switched. So, you know, a few Canadian space astronauts were, you know, talking as well, and said, Canadian Space Agency astronauts Jeremy Hansen and Joshua Kernock, one of four Canadian astronauts who may be on that Artemis 2 mission, were at the Kennedy Space Center ahead of the launch, who said the Artemis 1 mission is just the first step. In the end, we go back to the moon, but it's completely different this time. Not only are we going to a different location, there's going to be new science, new technology, but we also have our eyes on Mars, Hansen said. This is a proving ground to take humanity into deep space. This is just the first steps of something much, much grander. This is exciting shit, to put it lightly. Kernock has been to point out that it isn't just a U.S. effort. This isn't just NASA. This is a world effort. This is NASA leading the world along to go out and accomplish these really hard challenges to try and set up not just the U.S., but human presence on the moon and eventually on Mars, Kernock said. So it's very different in that respect, and it's very important in that respect that we're bringing the world along. This is amazing, amazing stuff. Canada is going to space. All these countries are going to space, not only the U.S. Remember, as I talked about, it was U.S. versus USSR in the beginnings. It's not that anymore. It's not. It is the world together trying to change the world, trying to change where humanity is going to go. That is some amazing stuff. So as a conclusion to this episode, I'd love to talk more, but nothing really happened yesterday as I would have liked to talk about. As well, I want to save more of the Artemis talk for when more Artemis stuff happens. There's a lot of exciting stuff happening in the future, and I don't want to, I guess, I don't know, spoil it and re-talk about stuff. So I'm going to save the rest of the exciting Artemis stuff, because once the unmanned mission launch is, I want to talk about what the other missions will actually be doing in more detail. But for now, Artemis is exciting, right? Although, as I mentioned, you know, it's kind of sad we're going back to the moon. It's taken 50 years. It's kind of annoying. Whatever. 50 years in hindsight isn't that long of a time. Yeah, sure, it's half of a human lifespan, even more than half of a human's lifespan. But it is, it's exciting stuff that we are even able to go to the moon, that we're able to change the world once again in this way. So, in all honesty, I think Artemis is going to be essential for us to reignite that fire under us and say, you know what, we need to go to Mars. And I think it's actually going to, because, you know, we can often forget that in science and that in space, a lot of this is really based off of, you know, what politicians want to give money to who. And at the end of the day, if they're not excited about something, if they're not inspired by something, they're not going to do it. Originally, Kennedy wasn't that interested in NASA, but he got inspired, and that made him able to push NASA farther and push the space program farther. A lot of people aren't interested in NASA, or weren't, and still aren't, and really downplay its importance in our world. Space exploration is very necessary, and people don't realize it, and I really do hope that this Artemis mission, if the only objective of this mission is to send a few people on space who, you know, are a different demographic than the white male, that's amazing. If it's just to, you know, learn a little bit more about the moon and maybe set up a few moon spots, that's amazing. And if, in all honesty, if it's just to inspire a few people to push more money into the program and send us to Mars, that is all we really need. In all honesty, that's all we need. I really do think that this mission's objective, if all it does is just pushes people to get a little bit excited about space, put a little bit of a smile on their face when they think about space, when they hear the word space exploration, or when they hear we're going to Mars, and they think, okay, you know what, we did Artemis recently, we can do this again. Because, you know, if you think about it, 50 years ago is a lot different, and if we can prove that we can do it again, and even better, and even more efficiently, that's going to help us a ton. So this is vital. Artemis is going to be vital for our future of going into space, and it's exciting, and I think it's definitely necessary, and it's going to be very exciting when it actually launches. As I've mentioned, very, very, very funny stuff. So hopefully you all liked today's episode. I sure did. I would love to keep talking about Artemis, but I want to save a lot more of that conversation and a lot more spacey conversations for later, maybe next week even. If it launches Friday, who knows? But first, what you can do is you can connect. So on Instagram, the podcast Instagram is ever.changingworld. Again, ever.changingworld. Go check it out. I post in there all the time. Twitter is everchangingwor. Again, everchangingwor. The website, which you're probably on, but it is shows.acast.com/ever-changing-world. Again, shows.acast.com/ever-changing-world. If you ever want to see these social medias, if you don't catch me talking because I talk pretty fast, go ahead. It's always in the bio. Also, if you want any of the three articles that I used today, it'll be in the link in the description in the bio of today's episode. Thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. Let's go to the moon. Tune in next week. Follow to stay updated. And the world is always changing.